and I have a milkshake. And I have a straw. There it is. That's a straw, you see. Watching. And my straw reaches across the room and starts to drink your milkshake. I drink your milkshake. I drink it up.
Don't bully me, Daniel.
Lots of milkshake drinking happening about a mile down under the Gulf of Mexico. And it appears, yeah, appears to be working.
Yay.
Well, that's the that's the latest word as we record our not live podcast. Tad Allen, who is coordinating the government response, says the well still has low pressure, but cement will be used to cap the well permanently as soon as the pressure hits zero. Engineers have succeeded in stopping the flow of oil and gas into the Gulf of Mexico from a gushing BP well. Federal government's top oil spill commander, U.S. Coast Guard Admiral Tad Allen. Is it Thad or Tad?
Said Tad.
Thursday morning. The top kill effort, launched Wednesday afternoon by industry and government engineers, has pumped enough drilling fluid to block all oil and gas from the well, Allen said. The pressure from the well is very low, but persists. Once engineers have reduced the well pressure to zero, they will begin to pump cement into the hole to entomb the well. To help that effort, he said, engineers are also pumping some debris into the blowout preventer at the top of the well. So they're also doing that junk shot, sounds like. They're also adding some, it's like a potpourri of gusher blockage. Mm. It's like Elvis's colon is basically what they're working on now.
The real Elvis, not
the real Elvis, that's right. Make sure to clarify. Well, you're colon too, are you sure?
Yes.
Have you probably had your colonoscopy recently?
Not recently, no, but probably do one any day now.
Death begins in the colon, you know.
It does. It does. And you know, if the junk shot or the top kill or whatever, if that doesn't work, they can get Daniel Plainview to get his milkshake straw in there. So.
Yes. Yes.
That movie ruined milkshakes for me. I loved a good milkshake until that scene. And then I'm like, just ruined milkshakes for me. Thanks a lot.
Right. Every time you go to drink a milkshake, you're going,
every time I drink a milkshake now, I want to beat an evangelical to death with the bowling ball.
Oh, man. Hey, how you doing? It's the Bob and Elvis Show on the iClips Network. Again, we're not live. We're doing a podcast here this week. Hope you don't mind. But and of course, all of that news that I just read off, that'll be really outdated.
Old news. By
when the show goes up, you know, in Labor Day,
and yes.
I tease Tech Sergeant Chen. I'm a kidder.
Memorial Day, by the day. By the way,
I kid because I love. Yeah, well, I meant Labor Day, meaning like months from now.
That that long. You'd be watching the Jerry Lewis telethon when this is on.
Right. so we were talking about cats, and the Farm of Doom has struck again, huh?
It has, yeah. I hate to bring the show down every week with this horrible news, but yeah, we out of 10 kittens, we lost two recently. Little respiratory infection running through the ranks. So I spent the better half of last night injecting the remaining kittens with oral antibiotics and fluids and deworming solution. So that was big fun. Little teeny tiny syringes filled with, you know, like 1 cc of this pink junk, scruffing them and forcing it down their throats.
Right.
But woke up this morning and everyone was alive. So good, you know, good start to the day on the Farm of Doom.
You know, actually, I never knew about that until recently, the whole notion of scruffing. I had no idea that if you scruff a cat, they
can reduce it to absolute paralytic joy.
Right.
And they love it. It's like it releases, you know, relaxation endorphins into their brains immediately. And you can get a cat to do anything, anything when you scruff it.
They become entirely petrified.
Completely.
Just, I mean, you can like paint a clown face on them. You can dress them up in little clothes. I mean, that's what I do.
Oh, you're one of those that likes to humanize your animals.
Yeah, that's right. And so what I was imagining as you're talking about sort of nursing your cats back to health is that you're dressed up in sort of your Joker from The Dark Knight nurse's costume.
Yeah, that's exactly
the creepy face makeup, and you're just going up, and you've got a gun to them. All right, you're gonna. shoving this medicine down their throats. Anyway, So I mean, in serious news, the oil spill appears to be stopped. I mean, it appears to be plugged with the top kill. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the latest news we're getting.
Yeah,
but
we'll see.
Yeah, what's remarkable to me though. In all of this, and this is, in fact, this morning on Morning Joe, the Mike Pence bot was on, again, calling for federal intervention, calling for the president and the federal government to come in and take over the effort in the Gulf, which is really odd. Again, coming from, you know, sort of small government, anti-socialism, anti-wealth redistribution Republicans.
Mm-hmm. It's happening. Yeah, suddenly they're all about the long arm of big government directing the invisible hand of fuck you capitalism.
Well, I mean, if you look at it from the perspective of, say, the TARP or the recovery package or any of these things that have happened over the last year, it's really no different. I mean, here you've got a corporation that has screwed up, jeopardizing natural resources, jobs, an entire section, entire section of the coast of the United States of America, and by the reasoning of the Republicans, they ought to be cleaning up their own mess or fail trying, right? I mean, that's what happened with the with TARP, right? That's what happened with the bailouts. They should handle this themselves. The free market should take care of everything,
right?
But
it knows best.
That's not the case, though. Now, no. The Republicans insist that the federal government has to come down there and do, well, basically take over the whole thing—a big government takeover of BP's oil spill—and I don't disagree. I mean, I actually kind of agree. I mean, I think the federal government has a responsibility to step in to a certain degree. Now, I know there's big political peril in this. I mean, I think this is the motivation behind why the Republicans are suggesting, why they're sort of really showing off their hypocrisy. They want the Obama administration to step in because if things go haywire,
yeah, then they own it.
Yeah, then it becomes the Obama administration's fault, and then they can use that. Because they have no qualms. I mean, they, on one hand, they can go out there and scream, drill, baby, drill, and on the other hand say, oh, well, Obama's in the pocket of big oil, as Sarah Palin did on Sunday.
Yeah. But then the third hand, they're in Congress, you know, they're trying to reduce the liability cap and you know, drive down the amount that BP will have to pay to cover this mess. So, I mean, they've got more irons in this fire than there is oil in the Gulf.
Right.
Well, because they're terrified that, you know, great big, that too much restriction on how much it costs them to clean this up will cripple the mom and pop oil drilling businesses. You know, the little operations that have 10, 15, 30, $50 million to throw around to sink a massive offshore oil rig like this. So, boy, you got to look out for those mom and pop shop oil rigs.
Why is there a liability? This is what I need to know here. Why is there a liability cap on the oil companies at all? I mean, is this, does every industry get a liability cap?
I don't know.
As mandated by the federal government?
Right, right. Yeah, you're liable up to this, but after that, that's just too much. We don't want to punish you that hard.
I mean, does a medical technology firm, I mean, do they have a liability cap if they create a hover-around scooter chair that suddenly goes haywire and kills a bunch of old people? Is there a limit? I don't think there is.
No.
But
no.
I could be very wrong on that. I have to look that up.
I think if you're in the business of manufacturing or producing or pulling from the very bowels of the earth some substance that has whether it's a radioactive isotope or, you know, delicious chocolate milky oil, you have, you know, the downside to your business model, which in, you know, 99 out of 100 times is just cashing in, you know, massive profit. The downside is when shit goes wrong, no liability cap, you know, you're screwed. You pay for it, you get it all back to normal, and, you know, that's just the price of doing business.
Well, that's the way it ought to be. And what's happening in the Senate right now is Republicans are filibustering the lifting of that liability cap. The Democrats want to say, okay, no more cap on these guys. Right. I mean, BP has gone, obviously, above and beyond the cap in terms of the money they've spent so far. But they could very easily say, well, okay, you know, we need to be compensated by the federal government for all this extra money we've spent on top of the $75 million liability cap. I mean, BP could very easily sue the federal government for all of that money to be reimbursed. I mean, that's entirely possible.
Awesome.
And the Republicans, led by guys like Senator Inhofe, are...
Oh, God, I hate that guy.
Absolutely filibustering the removal of this liability cap. And tell me, Republicans, tell me, wingnuts, tell me, teabaggers, how that is not a bailout of oil companies.
Yeah, it's just retro. It's kind of in reverse. It's a pre-bailout. It's, you know, Inhofe makes me so mad, that douchebag. He just has no conscience whatsoever.
Well, I mean, it's not just Inhofe; it's all of the Republicans, because it doesn't take. I mean, it takes more than just one Republican to block. You know, these are just.
The big problem right now is, and I think the Obama administration is sort of keenly aware of this, is that there's just not any. There really isn't a huge populist backlash against this. You know, there's still a significant percentage of polled, you know, of people being polled that are still pro drilling, pro explore, you know, pro oil, pro drill baby drill. And it's gone on for what, 35, 36 days now. And there's just not this populist uprising, like you think there would be, to get behind any sort of crippling restriction, you know, moratorium legislation or anything. It just doesn't seem to be. People just sort of like, whatever. So I don't know. I mean, maybe it's not enough video of, you know, we got that one oily pelican, and it's just not doing it. Maybe if there were aborted fetuses floating around in it, the right wing would get upset about it. But
otherwise,
just doesn't seem to be any rage about this at all in the machine.
Let's try to disperse the oil using fetus dolls.
Yeah.
I think that's
what the hell is with that fetus doll story. What was that about? I saw a tweet about that, and I'm just like, no, I'm not even going to look at that. That doesn't sound right.
And then did you notice how Steven Weber, our actor friend, Steven Weber, kind of went nuts with the fetus doll tweets? It was like an entire day of Steven Weber fetus doll tweets. And
he had them coming out of Justin Bieber's ass. I mean, everything is asses with Weber.
Asses and scrotums for some reason.
Like, now we've got fetus stalls and ass talk from Weber. That's he needs a hobby.
What was that tweet that you got from him?
Oh, I tweeted something at him, and then he wrote back that he was gonna kick my lily white ass, and then he said right after I get my fingers out of it. I was like, Jesus Christ, Weber, you got problems, man.
Oh my God. Why would he say that? I mean, why?
I don't know.
Hey,
I don't know.
I'm going to kick your ass right after I take my fingers out of it.
And it's funny, you know, 10, 15 years ago, I was sitting around watching Wings with my parents and going, you know, someday that guy's going to say he's going to kick my ass after he gets his fingers out of it.
And of course, the operative word here, or the operative grammar here, is fingers.
Fingers, plural. Yeah.
Plural.
Yeah, you know, that's how Weber rolls. It's not just one finger, baby.
He goes all the way.
It's a fist and a half.
And a fetus doll.
And a fetus doll.
Oh, man. Yeah, because I do think I encouraged him, because after his first fetus doll tweet, I replied to him and I said, yeah, the fetus doll I had when I was a child had kung fu grip. And I think that just spurred him on.
Said it, yeah. You don't want, it's like, you know, don't feed the bears, man. Just don't encourage him.
For the youngsters listening in, there was a G.I. Joe doll in the 70s that had kung fu grip. I just want to clarify that. But back to the you were talking about how people are just kind of,
Other than the Gulf Coast communities, and I think Harry Shearer and that little bald Cajun nightmare. oh my God, I loved it. I love him as an opera, you know, politically, but I cannot look at him. He looks like one of those. He looks like that Jeff Dunham old man doll. Yeah. Now.
Well, he looks like Gollum,
just collapsing in on itself. But he has a point, you know. I think Obama needs to get down there and shake some hands and, you know, walk on the beach and get his shoes dirty with this thing. At the very, if not a federalization of the cleanup and the fix, then at least get down there and eat some, you know, seafood, eat some Creole, you know, eat, have some shrimp with these people.
No.
Do something.
Yeah.
Because it's starting to look like he doesn't give a rat's ass.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you don't want a president who necessarily... you know, because I think the reaction is typically that we want the president to go down there and set up like a command and control center and just be there all the time with like beakers testing the dispersants and on the phone and like video of him like on in front of computers and doing that whole thing. Kind of like what George Bush tried to do in Katrina that totally backfired, where he's standing there with Michael Brown in front of, like, I don't know what it was, like a Risk game board or something in front of him. And then all these unused helicopters sitting behind, like a fleet of unused helicopters. And then, of course, the famous, you're doing a heck of a job, Brownie.
Yeah,
and that, no, we don't necessarily want that. But, I, you know, and I think there was kind of a day this week where I was really kind of losing my patience with the president, and I think I'm allowed. I mean, I think my record of kind of giving the president a lot of latitude is well established.
Yeah.
But I mean, I really got to the point where I felt like, you know what? And it was right. I was watching, I think it was David Axelrod on Hardball. And he was there at the press section of the North Lawn of the White House. And he was talking about how, well, Stephen Chu is, you know, we've got Stephen Chu out there and we're, you know, we're looking at this thing and we're talking with BP every day and we're getting answers from them. And I'm going, my God, we all feel so helpless. Like there's nothing, we're at the mercy of this gigantic corporation that cares nothing about the Gulf Coast.
Stake.
Yeah. The only reason they care about the Gulf Coast right now is because it's a PR nightmare for them and it's affecting their bottom line. Prior to that, they're still using technology, as Rachel Maddow underscored last night on her show. I'll be posting that video later today on the blog. But Rachel Maddow went through an oil spill from the 70s where the exact same well capping technology, the same sort of, you know, oil leak amelioration. Yeah. Process was it, technology was all still being used back in the 70s. They haven't
1979.
Yeah,
they called it, the Mexicans called it the sombrero.
Yeah,
the top hat.
The sombrero.
Oh God, this is like a bad, you know, Woody Allen movie at this point. It's just comical.
So these guys are in control of this process, and I'm not suggesting necessarily that the federal government, the president, nationalize or federalize the whole scene and boot BP out of there, and that, you know, obviously,
yeah, because I don't know that they could do a better job. I mean, my whole point about that is, you know, what is the government going to do that these people don't already know how to do and aren't already doing?
Right.
So I really don't see the, you know, unless they could get the, you know, Crimson Tide in there and, you know, submarine and nuke the shit out of it or something. I don't know what they could do.
Well, I mean, I think obviously what ought to happen is, to a certain degree, you know, if this top kill doesn't work, then I really think that the government needs to start making decisions in terms of just taking like co-opting BP, taking over the manpower and the technology, and just start making the decisions for BP. Now, I know that's politically perilous, but I don't trust BP. I don't trust their ability to make these decisions in a way. And this goes back to sort of this axe I've been grinding for the last couple of weeks, which is, could they have tried this top kill 3 weeks ago?
Yeah.
And just didn't, because they wanted to get that siphon tube in there and start sucking up some of the oil, drinking the milkshake.
Right.
And I tend to believe that that's what was going on.
Yeah.
That, you know, and they say, well, you know, maybe they were, maybe they're really trying to work on it. No, I'm not going to give them the benefit of the doubt. This is a company that has earned no, it's like Floyd Landis. They have earned no credibility in my book. I am done.
Here's something I don't know. Maybe you know this because you're so Mr. Oil Spill, but other than the revenue realized by the U.S. government for the purchase of the lease off the coast, since BP is a British company, does the American taxpayer see, I mean, does the American economy see any benefit to the profit of that oil? I mean, is that BP an American subsidiary, or is it, I mean, this is a British company. So what, when it was running well, when things were working and it was doing right, what financial benefit did America see from that rig?
That's I don't know for sure.
I mean, you have to pay for the lease, you know, yeah. You have to pay the government owns the land, right? So you have to buy from us to get in there. But then, I mean, even American oil companies, Exxon doesn't pay federal taxes, for Christ's sake. I mean, the Exxon headquarters is in a mailbox in Bermuda. So, I mean, I'm wondering what financial big C capitalist, you know, benefit we ever got from BP out there, you know, fucking the crust hole out in the American waters. That's what I want to know. You know, what benefit was this to us when it was doing well, correctly, not oil well?
Now, don't quote me on this, but I think there's a lease payment that gets made. These are federal waters that they're drilling in.
Right. But other than that.
Yeah, but I mean, I think there are lease payments, but they haven't been paid. Like, they don't routinely go and collect them. I mean, the next big scandal, and I haven't really even jumped into this one yet because I'm still focused on plugging the damn hole.
Yeah.
Obviously, the next big thing here is what the hell went wrong at the, you know, at mineral management? What happened at the EPA? MMS, yeah. I mean, obviously, there are big, big sections of the federal bureaucracy that totally failed here. I mean, one of the big stories this week is that oil companies were writing their own safety evaluations in pencil, and the EPA was, you know, tracing over them with pen.
Yeah, Salazar's got to go. Have not been at all impressed with his cowboy hat wearing ass. MMS needs to get, I mean, literally destroyed and rebuilt. I mean, just torn down brick by brick and put back together in some other way. You know, there has to be some fairly major, blowout from this. There really has to be some serious head rolling at EPA, because it's just a massive fall down.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and you know, again, I'm always hesitant to say, well, you know, let's bring in all sides. Everyone's at fault here. Oh, no. By the way, incidentally, the they're walking back the Tad Allen thing.
Yeah, because I saw in the front page of the New York Times, they were saying, you know, outcome iffy here. So.
Yeah. Oh, and Elizabeth.
Top kill remain uncertain, it says.
You know, I got to tell you, hats off to the political carnival ladies. I don't know how they do it. I just can't keep up. I mean, they just blitz. I mean, every time something happens, it's like instantaneously on the political carnival. I mean, I give up. I'm going to go grab their RSS feed and embed it into my blog and just let them go.
They really are right on top of it.
That's totally a compliment. But I mean, here, Elizabeth Birnbaum, director of the MMS, has been fired.
Wow. Good.
Well, yeah. I mean, you know,
suck it.
How about that? Just like awesome. Bush, no one got fired after Katrina, did they?
Right. I mean, Brown didn't stick around for very long, but still. I mean, yeah, I mean, this administration, I mean, we lost the national intelligence dude recently. This administration doesn't seem entirely adverse to kicking ass, so that's good. MMS, I mean, firing the top of MMS is one thing, but they need to, I mean, just scrub the. This is the agency, for people that don't know, that last year or so they found out that they were doing meth off of toaster ovens and screwing everybody. I mean, they were literally in bed with the industries that they were supposed to be regulating.
Yeah.
So I don't know what the hell's in the water over there.
So here it is from Reuters. The Unified Command Tackling the Oil Spill in the Gulf of Mexico cannot confirm or deny a Los Angeles Times report that BP's top kill operation to plug its leaking well has succeeded. So they don't. At this moment, we can't confirm or deny anything, she told Reuters.
It's awesome.
This person from BP. So we don't know. We don't know if it's working or not. But if you look at that video, I mean, what you're seeing are like three big plumes gushing out at an alarming rate. Yeah. I think that's all mud.
Yeah.
And so I guess the physics of it is if they figure if they pump in enough of this sort of mud material, it's not mud. It's sort of drilling compound. It's sort of like this clay water compound with, you know what I found out? It's got Gur gum in it.
Wow.
So it's like it's got something in common with ice cream, which, of course, is then in a milkshake.
Oh, my God. There will be blood.
God, the milkshake comparison's unbelievable. If it's not like chocolate, it's like chocolate milk on the surface, and it's a milkshake down there at the blowout preventer. Anyway, so what the hell was I saying? So the mud, if the pressure of the mud is greater than the pressure of the oil, then the mud takes over. It's liquid dynamics, I think that's what they call it. And so that's the whole idea of it. So the mud is gushing out, but the pressure of the mud is greater, so it blocks, the pressure of the oil. So and once the mud is flowing through all of the valves in the blowout preventer, then that allows them to start injecting in cement at the same rate of pressure, if I'm understanding this correctly. And so once the cement is in there, somehow the cement is going to dry and harden and entomb the blowout preventer. So, I mean, we can only hope that's the way it's going to function, that's the way it's going to work.
Technology, everyone. Welcome to the 21st century.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the next time I hear when progressives and liberals, get up a oil company's ass about their profits, and the company's response is, we need that, we take all that money for research and development. Yeah. My ass.
Right.
Research and development. 30 years since the Mexico spill, and we're still pumping mud and guar gum into a burst well. My ass. Research and development. How about you make gasoline, 89 cents, and kiss my ass for the next 6 months? How about that?
Right.
Research and development. That's what they always say. Oh, well, we needed to make $60 trillion last year because it all goes into research and development into how to find more delicious chocolatey, dinosaur oil.
Right.
Not how to stop that shit when it blows up.
Well, I mean, we're getting a great glimpse into how a major corporation works, whether it's an oil company or whether it's Monsanto or whether it's Microsoft or whether it's Walmart or any of these corporations. It's all about profit margin, and they will bullshit their way through any shitstorm and come out clean on the other side because that's the way, because they've got people like Senator Inhofe in the Senate who will filibuster lifting the liability caps. They are just allowed to get away with murder, and we're seeing it with Tony Hayward, shoving reporters around on the beach. He's talking about how the environmental damage is going to be quote unquote modest.
And then who's it, Matt Lauer got another BP guy to basically reverse that by just getting up his ass and do you agree with your own CEO? No. So that guy's probably got another week to go on his contract.
That's right. Well, speaking of Monsanto, and I don't want to get off on the Monsanto track because there's still some oil spill stuff here, but their stock, I don't know if you've noticed, their stock is just tanking. I think it's down I've got something going up later with their stock ticker. I mean, it's really, really, really bad for them. And
oh my
and
God, just, look at that. It's gone from, holy crap.
Yeah.
In like 5 days, it's tanked out massively. Wow, that's good.
It's gone from, oh, and then they're opening much lower too. I think they closed yesterday at $52 a share. And now they're, wow, like 40, they're down to 48 a share. Yeah. So nice. They're already opening way down on a high volume.
What's the, I think what's people precipitating are just dumping it? I mean, what did they do?
I'm scanning the news here. You know, I think it's just a variety of different things.
Oh, wait, the EU is, policies and plans have been, looks like the EU is getting ready to legislate on genetically modified crops. So maybe there's some rumblings that they're going to nix that shit.
I just love it. I mean, I love it. I got to look into this a little more, but it's just, it's getting killed. It's been getting killed all year long. I mean, it's really been down, down, down. I mean, they've had a really shitty year, and I'm so happy. Between the Justice Department investigation, just the ongoing, I mean, now they're finding these, you know, Roundup resistant bugs in India.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it's a perfect storm of a variety of different things. I mean, here back in January, their stock was up at around $85 a share. Now
so it's basically halved itself.
Yeah. And now it's at 48. And it's not because of the Dow necessarily. I mean, if you're on Google Finance and you click the Dow ticker as well, you'll see that the Dow has kind of steadily been, hovering.
200 points today. So
yeah, it's up 200 points already today.
Yeah,
I got to tell you, the whole idea of a double dip recession is scaring the shit out of me.
I know.
I'm just seeing, you know, every once in a while I'll catch someone like comment on the blog or something like that. Double dip is coming.
Yeah.
Stock market's going to tank back down again. And, you know, this is the other day it was down below 10,000 points. And I'm going, Jesus Christ. The first recession was a bloody goddamn mess. I do not want to go through another one for a long, long time. So. Yeah.
But, I don't know. I mean, I don't either. I mean, a double dip would be worse than just one big, massive one. I'm still in the Paul Krugman camp that we got off so easy that we just didn't do enough. The federal government. I really wish the first one had just been much more punishing. I'm looking for a clock resetter, and I want a count zero kind of recession where it just kicks us all really hard in the nuts. More power to your family, but frankly, I want to live in a fucking cardboard box for a year. I really do. I want to be like Skid Row guy. I just want to see the whole system completely reset. But that's me. I'm a fiscal anarchist.
Have fun with that.
Yeah, I will. I'll send you a postcard from my refrigerator box.
Me, I hate moving. I mean, that's my whole motivation against the recession. I just don't like to move. It's like, oh, God damn. You know what I mean? I got to sell the house, and then, I got to find boxes. I got to go around, to the backs of all the grocery stores and compile boxes to put shit in. It's just a headache.
Yeah,
and that's why the recession, the whole idea of a double dip recession scares me, because, man, if I have to sell my house, that means I got to move.
Yeah.
That's such a bullshit chore. Monsanto is down 7.69% today.
Just today.
Yeah.
Wow. Are they on the Dow or NASDAQ? I guess they're the Dow, huh?
Yeah. Huh. Oh wait, yeah. Yeah. No, NASDAQ.
Are they NASDAQ?
Yeah.
Which is supposed to compare it to the... That's terrifying. Would they be a technology stock?
What says here? I think I'm seeing. Oh, New York stock. No. They're not NASDAQ. I have no idea. I have no idea what they're on. I don't know what I'm talking about.
I don't either.
No, New York Stock Exchange. That would be the Dow, right?
Well, I guess.
We're a couple of experts. I don't know.
New York Stock Exchange is everything. It's everything is traded on the New York Exchange. That's the Dow and NASDAQ and S&P.
My God.
And all that.
This would be the section of the podcast that I edit out.
When you're stupid.
So back to the OS. But we've got the president's going to talk on television today. He's doing a press conference. The first one in a long time. First press conference he's done in a while. And I got to tell you, I don't necessarily blame him for not wanting to do any more or doing a whole lot, because he was originally doing a lot of press conferences. And then I think it just became so ridiculous.
Yeah. I think he's just got no tolerance for the press. They're just so fucking retarded.
Well, and I mean, the exact same thing is going to happen today. I bet you.
Yeah.
And the folks listening in will obviously have a better perspective listening on the podcast. But my prediction is that it'll be completely sidetracked by something ridiculous like Blumenthal or Sestak.
Yeah. Oh, they're going to paint him in a corner on Sestak. They got to get him on record. You know, and he'll have to prevaricate and, you know, comment and blah, blah, and it'll make it worse. But that's absolutely what they'll do.
Yeah. Well, you know, and this is a great example of how the corporate press and mainly the cable news people are trying to force feed an issue. And it's the same with the Blumenthal situation. They're trying to force feed an issue that they think is important in their sort of inside Washington villager cocktail party circuit, and trying to make it an important issue for everyone else. When we're all going, you know what, God damn it, we just want them to plug the frickin' leak in the Gulf of Mexico. We don't care. Joe Sestak, who cares? It's you know what? It's not even technically illegal.
No, it's not illegal. It's not even technically unethical.
Yeah.
That's the thing. That's just the way Washington works. Sorry.
Well, that's the way political parties function. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all, you know, quid pro quo. It's all, hey, yeah, it's a non-story. And yeah, it's just something the Republican noise machine is going to latch onto. And now they're going to force, you know, the president to get on record about it. And it's going to, again, no national significance whatsoever.
Well, and here Media Matters compiled some opinions by various legal experts about the Sestak thing. Now, if you don't know what happened with Joe Sestak, basically, when he was deciding to challenge Arlen Specter for the Democratic nomination for Senate, evidently the White House, someone from the White House, we don't know who, obviously the insinuation is that it's Rahm Emanuel, offered him a position in the administration if he wouldn't run. And this has happened is like an offer for a quid pro quo that wasn't accepted. It was just a thing. Yeah. And he turned it down, obviously. But now, you know, the Republicans are talking about subpoena. You know, if they win the House back, they're going to be
special prosecutor.
It's not illegal. No. Bush
it's
ethics
not
lawyer,
even unethical.
Right. Bush ethics lawyer calls the claim that a job offer is a bribe difficult to support, quote unquote.
That's a Bush ethics lawyer. Yeah. And if there's ever been a contradiction in terms,
right?
Bush ethics lawyer.
Various other legal experts here, according to Media Matters, I don't see the crime. There is no bribery case here. I don't put much stock in this, and I don't think it's going to go anywhere. It's a horrible precedent, but treat horse trading in the criminal it's a horrible precedent to treat horse trading in the criminal context. So what else? Tell me a White House that didn't do this. Go back to George Washington. Ethics laws do not seem designed for this circumstance. On down. Okay, Reagan administration reportedly offered a job for a candidate to step down. Reagan advisor reportedly offered California senator a job with the administration if he decided not to seek reelection. I mean, it's just
happens
again,
all the time.
It's
a one for one. There's no bribery if it's a one for one. The whole point of bribery is like, hey, I want to give you $100,000 here for you to do, you know, something that benefits me much more greatly, right? There has to be a vast, you know, difference between the apple on one side and the orange on the other. This is apples to apples. It's don't take this job, take this job. There's no, and you couldn't do both at the same time by federal law. So there's no, it's just the way politics works. It's just moving chess pieces is all it is.
And I assure you that in today's press conference, the name Blagojevich will come up, because this is another hobby horse that the corporate cable news people have been talking about. That this is just like Blagojevich offering, you know, bribing people, trying to get, you know, extorting money from people in order to, you know, get Senate appointments and things like that. I mean, here's some of the things that Blagojevich really did that are completely dissimilar to, you know, someone from the White House saying, well, you know what, if you decide not to run for Senate, Joe Sestak, we'll maybe get your spot in the administration. There's no money exchanging hands. They're saying, you know what, we're going to give you a pile of money. We're going to give you a pile of cash.
It was a job for which he's eminently qualified, too.
Of course. It was probably Secretary of Navy, but we don't
right.
know. So, meanwhile, Rod Blagojevich was attempting to, he tried to extort the Tribune Media Company. He was trying to, he was asking for money for
appointments. I mean, like, if you pay me $50,000, I'll make you such and so, right? I mean, wasn't that what he was doing?
Yeah. I mean, that was for the Senate, to replace Barack Obama in the Senate. But then there was a variety of other things that he was being investigated for as well. I mean, he offered Children's Memorial Hospital $8 million of state funds if they offer him a $50,000 campaign contribution.
Right.
I mean, is that anything at all like the Sestak situation? The bottom line, I didn't spend too much time on the Sestak thing because I think it's horseshit. But look, and that's exactly the point.
Yeah.
And the church is trying to make a big deal out of this.
Yeah. And it's a meme now. It's going around, and it's, you know, it's what the right wants to talk about, and they control the conversation. So it'll probably be his first question.
I mean, we talk about motivating ourselves and sort of getting stirring up, rallying the base for November. All we've got to continue to go back to is the fact that if the Democrats lose the House of Representatives, say what you will about this Democrat or that Democrat in the Senate or House or otherwise, blue dogs and so forth.
Yeah.
If we lose the House, and the Senate, for that matter, I think it will be an ongoing push to impeach the president.
Yeah, it'll be Whitewater all over again.
Yeah.
Total noise. I mean, led by Fox News and, a handful of retarded Republican representatives and senators, and it'll be Whitewater all over again.
I mean, even the people who are sort of on the fence, the swing voters. I mean, if you think that suddenly, if we hand over the Congress to the Republicans, do you think in a million years anything more is going to get done?
Right.
Nothing will get done.
Yeah.
It'll be a nonstop investigation. That's the only thing that's going to happen. It's going to be Darrell Issa subpoenaing everyone for, is that a word? Subpoenaing?
Sure.
Everyone from the White House. Everyone from the administration.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what's going to happen continuously until they come up with some little nugget of something, whether it's the Joe Sestak thing or whether it's even the birth certificate situation. Something's going to happen that's going to lead to an attempt to impeach the president. And again, impeachment doesn't imply conviction. Impeachment implies the House voting to begin that Senate trial.
No, I absolutely agree. There's no chance that doesn't happen.
And, you know, I just cannot imagine, I cannot grasp the reasoning behind any voter who says, well, let's try the Republicans again, because they were so good for so many years. Yeah. I mean, they did so well.
It's backlash, man. It's just.
Yeah, but I mean, nothing. I mean, there's going to be such gridlock, and everyone's going, oh, gridlock. Well, what the hell? They can't get anything done in Congress.
Yeah.
I mean, you think it was bad with health care for a year in terms of stalling and slowness and just having a hard time pushing anything through with filibusters? And you ain't seen nothing yet. You remember the late 90s? I mean, it was a miracle anything got done. I mean, the late 90s, I mean, they were shutting down the government, for God's sake. The Clinton administration had to resort to nothing but school uniforms and midnight basketball.
Yeah.
And that's what it's going to be like. You want legislation that's going to be nothing but school uniform legislation? Vote for the Republicans in November.
Yeah.
It's stupid. People are being petulant and stupid if they think in a million years that electing a Republican Congress, a Republican House of Representatives, a Republican Senate is going to do any good. And I'm not talking about just the swing voters or the people on the right. I'm talking about liberals who somehow think that, well, if we vote for a Republican or if we vote, you know, if we primary challenge this one guy, then this then we'll get our progressive guy in who is going to get slaughtered in the general.
Yeah.
And I'm talking specifically in red states.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's no evidence whatsoever that Halter could defeat a Republican challenger in Arkansas.
Right.
But I mean, I think it's possible for Joe Sestak. I mean, we've got a sort of a mixed bluish state in Pennsylvania here.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's not the time. You want to change things in terms of the way the Democratic Party does business. You want to start weeding out some of the blue dogs. Get your ass out on the streets, start going door to door, and convince your neighbors that progressive policies are better for the country.
Yeah.
Convince them. Infiltrate the school boards. You want to talk about you want to talk about a waste of time? Organize a protest in front of the White House. There's no bigger waste of goddamn time that you could orchestrate than a big protest. There's signs and bullshit, bullhorn screeching.
Yeah.
It's completely ineffectual in the year 2010. You want to get in there and change the way things are, get elected to your school board. Get a bunch of your progressive friends in your neighborhood together and get elected to the school board and start dictating what happens with textbooks. Do exactly what the conservatives are doing in Texas. They were able to slowly and systematically work their way up to the point where they are deciding. Wingnut conservative freak dogs who think that Thomas Jefferson doesn't belong in the history books.
Yeah.
They managed to work their way into that position. And they did it not by putting together ridiculous rallies on the mall.
Right.
They did it by...
And they got elected.
Yeah, by patiently and methodically weaseling their way into the system from the bottom up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way you change things.
It's terrifying what they're doing in Texas.
I mean, meanwhile, we're swinging for the fences.
Yeah.
And all that's going to end up doing is giving us, I mean, we may connect a few times, but it's going to be one whiff after another.
I don't know. I mean, I think there are a few things that, like the Arizona immigration law, I think is going to turn a massive Hispanic tide towards towards Democrats. It's just a matter of mobilizing them. You know, it's the deepest untapped, unregistered voter base out there.
Yeah.
We got to mobilize that. We got to do everything we did right in 2008 times 10. And I just don't know if the political fire in the belly is there for the midterms. There's just a vast, vast section of the country that just isn't aware of the midterms, won't turn out for it, you know.
Yeah.
Rather than the sort of mobile, you know, the Tea Party, you know, that whole base. I mean, they're out and they're doing stuff. So we have to find some counterlever to that.
Right.
Scary.
Well, I mean, the case of Arizona. I mean, Arizona is, I think, politically. And I'm speaking again in sort of crass, ugly political terms here. Arizona is a gift to Democrats.
Yeah,
I mean, Arizona really is
long term.
Right. I mean, it's delivering the Latino vote to the Democrats.
Yeah.
But we can't rely on constantly waiting for the Republicans to shoot themselves in the foot in order to gain politically from that.
Yeah.
It's fine to do as I do on a daily basis, to sit and plug in my ridiculous thoughts about politics and liberals and conservatives and wing nuts and Glenn Beck and Sarah Palin. It's another thing entirely, I think, and I'm talking specifically now about the people who go beyond blogging and who are real activists, that the idea here is to not just swing for the fences and shoot for these big sea changes in the United States Senate. I mean, that's way at the top of the pyramid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We got to get into the bottom of the pyramid and start working our way up, because the conservatives have been at it since the 60s. It's slowly weaseling their way, injecting their crazy into the system. And, you know, we've been seeing hints of it. And I think the biggest consequence of all of that has been this Texas school board insanity. Mm-hmm. I mean, John Calvin, for God's sake, come on.
Yeah. It's, I don't know. It's the conflation of, you know, and again, I'm still getting these wingnut emails, and I got this one it's circulated forever, but it's the whole, did you know that 52 out of the 55 signers of the Constitution were evangelical Christian, you know, that sort of stuff. It's the combination. It's the coming together of this, you know, just science denying, evangelical fervor with political power is absolutely terrifying to me. It's just because it just has no basis in reality, in objective fact.
Yeah. You
know, I'm on day, I don't know, 4 or 5 of this Glenn Beck watching project of mine, where this, you know, I was talking about this last week because I can't get through it. I swear to God, I'm not even kidding. 6 single space word type documents in Word. I've got a Word document open that is now 6 pages, and it's just the first 16 minutes of one show from last week, a week ago today, because it's just so tightly packed with crazy. And it's nothing. I wish I could just go, oh, that what he said? Lie. That? Lie. None of it is really just lies. It's just the analysis. It's the conclusions that he comes to. It's the things that he says with the stuff that he runs, these quotes from 30-year-old books. He'll pull, you know, and luckily, thank God for Google Books, I can actually pull these quotes off of the Glenn Beck show that he puts up there. I can go to Google Books. I can find the original. And then I have to get into this whole contextual argument to make my point. So it's literally 6 single-spaced pages for 16 minutes of the Glenn Beck show. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's killing. And then he gets to, so that the whole first 16 minutes was global governance. Glenn Beck is panicked, or he wants his people to be panicked about global governance, about, because he knows that there's a evangelical dog whistle about one world governments, that part of the, when the devil comes down and we all got 666 on our faces and you know, the fire and brimstone and the seven-headed dragon and all that, one of the things that precedes that is a one-world government in the Armageddon talk.
Yeah.
So, you know, the whole fact, any organization with the word global in it is immediately demonized, even though we live in a global economy, and even though these are the same people that go to Walmart and buy all their shit from China, don't understand that, you know, we have to be a player in a global economy, and there have to be some concessions to these other countries that we're outsourcing all our jobs to, right?
Yeah.
So the whole first 16 minutes is global governance and just drawing these unbelievably absurd conclusions. And he's got this chalkboard with faces, scary progressive faces stuck up on it. He absolutely, I swear to God, pulled Obama's picture off the thing and said, Reverend Wright. That he, 2010, now today, with everything going on, he pulled the Jeremiah Wright card. So that immediately to me is, you know, up your ass, Beck. But for 16 minutes, he talked about nothing but global governance, and none of it was legitimate. But none of it was outright lies. It was just the way he takes information and just says things, just says random words, and his audience just goes, oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, global. Oh, my God. It's just 6 pages for 16 minutes. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's exhausting.
I'm never going to finish it. It's exhausting.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've said this before on the show, but I just cannot, I can't watch the Glenn Beck program because it's literally, it makes my brain hurt because it's just, again, it's, as you said, it's so tightly packed with crazy that, and nonsense. I mean, it's not just lies. It's just nonsense. Like you go, that makes no sense. Oh, and and this next thing he said, that's not even funny, but he thinks it's funny. And somewhere there's someone going, that's hilarious. Right. You go, well, how is that? What? I don't. And suddenly I'm going, yeah. You know, I'm like twisted around myself going, God, just desperately reaching for the power button on the television to shut it off because it's so bad.
In his mind, in his world, I mean, then he goes, so the first 16 minutes is global governance, and that's pretty easy to kick in the ass because it's just not possible. I mean, yeah. I don't understand what they think their conspiracy is. You know, when I rebut something, she writes me these emails and I rebut it with facts and figures and statistics. And then she'll write back, oh, well, you'll just wait and see. Just wait and see. There'll be some crisis and one world government. And I'm like, what is that? How? What? Function, what system of government, what force, what physical force does Obama own that he could force us to all become part of a global government and right. anti-constitutionally be governed by, you know, France or whatever, wherever, or The Hague or wherever this exists, this one world government. What, it's not like the military is going to go, oh, you want us to shit on the Constitution and be run by, you know, some Swiss, the Swiss. Okay. Well, we'll go out and round up all Americans and shoot them in the face. The ones that don't want that. I mean, what is the end result? How does that happen? No one can tell me that. Oh, just wait. Just wait. They'll shred the Constitution. It's like, oh, you mean like after 9/11, the Patriot Act, and you mean things like that? No. You just wait. One world government.
Yeah. I mean, I give you a lot of credit because there's different layers of insanity out there. And I think there's, I mean, one layer is kind of the cable news people. The next layer down is kind of like the wingnut Republicans. And then the next layer down, you get into like Sarah Palin and Mike Pence and just the quacks. And the next layer down are the people you're trying to debate. It is one world government. What? I mean, how do you even get? I mean, you get so deep into the weeds that it's impossible to even wrap your head around that universe. It's like like discussing, you know, Scientology or libertarianism. It's so twisted and weird and based on partially on fiction and.
I mean, a part of me knows as I'm writing this thing, a part of me knows that it's pointless. I mean, a big part of me knows that it's pointless, that none of this is going to get through our head, that none of it is going to, I'm not going to sink a single basket in this, in this process. No. But I've just got to do it for my own, you know, it's making me feel better about my disdain for Glenn Beck. And if, you know, if I was ever able to actually debate him in some arena, I feel good knowing that I've completely deconstructed his the way he does business, which is just to take fine and to his credit, for his audience, the things he's able to pull, the quotes and the clips that he's able to put up there are devastating. I mean, he's got Andy Stern up there literally saying, I want to redistribute wealth. And he's got that clip from Joe the Plumber when Obama said, very unfortunately, you know, redistribute the wealth. But my whole response to that is, right, I'm a wealth redistributor. I'm not afraid to say that.
Yeah.
When the, you know, give me like the whole thing, the next segment of Beck Show is all about wealth distribution. And he says, he points to Andy Stern and says, who's now one of Obama's fiscal advisors. And then I go, oh, wow, that sounds pretty bad. And then I go and look at the makeup of the committee that he's on. And it's a bipartisan commission. There's six Republicans on it and a bunch of CEOs and an ex-Fed chair person. I mean, it's a very diverse commission. It has no legislative power. It's not writing any laws. It's an advisory board.
Yeah.
And in order for any of its reports to come out of that committee, 14 out of the 18 members have to sign off on it. 14 out of 18. Mm-hmm. So if there's one Andy Stern on that who is a non-apologetic redistributionist, if there's one of those on an 18-member panel whose ranks include the CEO of fucking Honeywell, who made like $15 million last year, I'm all for that. I'm fine with that. One unapologetic redistributionist on a panel like that, I am absolutely fine with. So, and that's my argument. What's your problem? This is a committee that has absolutely no legislative power. What's your problem? They have no answer for that. Oh, well, they're advising Obama. Right. And then it goes to Congress and Congress will shit on it.
Yeah.
That's how it works.
Well, and meanwhile, they don't mind the wealth redistribution when it means redistributing wealth from Pennsylvania and Massachusetts down to Louisiana, Alabama, Mississippi, and Florida for the Gulf Coast cleanup. That's fine. Right. Send anything. Bobby Jindal. Send help. God damn, send help down here now, fast. Where's it gonna go? It gotta go right here. And that is wealth redistribution. We're paying taxes and it's getting funneled from me in Pennsylvania and you in Nebraska and people in Massachusetts and liberals and tree huggers and environmental wackos and getting redistributed down to Louisiana.
Right.
Where everyone is so freaked out about wealth redistribution point where they're going to keep voting for Republican politicians. It's insane. Yeah. It's backwards.
And this is a person, this wingnut, who has challenged me to do this Beck thing and is so who cannot send me an email that doesn't say something about supporting capitalism, is right now, as we speak, on Section 8 housing. Government funded Section 8 housing. They have almost a nicer house than I do. And they have a gorgeous house, and something like 60% of their monthly rent comes from Section 8.
Oh my God.
Fuck you is my bottom line. And I never play that card. I never, because that's cruel. I mean, it's not their fault. They both have jobs and they've got a fairly big 4 kids, and but they're on Section 8 housing. So sorry. It's that whole book, you know, what's the matter with Kansas? What are these people doing? Why is this woman who works in a local community center, which is subsidized, this local community center that pays her checks is subsidized with county and state funds to run. It's an old folks. It's a place for old people to gather. It's got private funding and it's got government funding. But why is this person so unbelievably concerned about the, you know, millionaire paychecks? Which to me is, you know, the capitalism is, when you talk about capitalism, that's what you're talking about, you know, the $15 million payday that this Honeywell guy got, and he's sitting on the board of fiscal advisors. So that's awesome.
Staggering. I mean, the hypocrisy. I mean, the hypocrisy runs throughout the Republican Party. I mean, it's when you build an entire party based on platitudes and bumper sticker slogans, it's bound to disintegrate when you actually, you know, dig past the 1 inch of sloganeering and you get into the actual reality of it. And here, yeah. I mean, here's a great example. Is there our weekly edition of Sarah Palin Chokes on History?
Oh God.
I got to come up with it. I got to get a jingle for Sarah Palin Chokes on History. But this is Sarah Palin choking on recent history regarding the Gulf oil spill.
Governor, I want to pick up on the point that you just made, which is that you did, as governor of Alaska, go after oil companies, including BP, in several cases. How do you think the Obama administration has handled the oil spill so far?
Stand by for word salad.
Well, I think that there is perhaps a hesitancy to, I don't really know how to put this, Chris, except to say that the oil companies who have so supported President Obama in his campaign and are supportive of him now, I don't know why the question isn't asked by the mainstream media and by others if there's any connection with the contributions made to President Obama and his administration and the support by the oil companies to the administration. If there's any connection there to President Obama taking so doggone long to get in there, to dive in there and grasp the complexity and the potential tragedy that we are seeing here in the Gulf of Mexico. Now, if this was President Bush, or if this were a Republican in office who hadn't received as much support even as President Obama has from BP and other oil companies, you know, the mainstream media would be all over his case in terms of asking questions why the administration didn't get in there,
dive
in there and make sure that the regulatory agencies were doing what they were doing with the oversight to make sure that things like this don't happen.
Okay. Now Sarah Palin chokes on history because during the 2008 election cycle, this is, of course, according to Steve Bannon, during the 2008 election cycle, 77% of the industry's $35.6 million in contributions went to Republicans. Mm. And in the 2008 presidential contest, Republican candidate Senator John McCain, along with his running mate Sarah Palin, received more than twice as much money from the oil and gas industries as Obama. McCain collected $2.4 million, Obama $898,000.
Doggone. Which isn't to say that, you know, yeah. I mean, that's, he's still, even if he took a buck, there's still some, that's the thing. I just, why, I don't understand a world where that sort of corporation is able to make a political contribution at all.
Well,
I hate it.
Well, and now it's going to become more it's going to become easier for them to do it because heretofore they were able to form these political action committees where individual employees could donate to the political action committee or individual employees could just donate directly to the candidate.
Yeah.
But now the corporation just donate whatever the hell they want.
Yeah.
Just unfettered, awesome. Thanks to Citizens United.
Yeah, well, and that they need to get in there and make the transparency. I mean, they need to get in there and pass a huge, huge chunk of legislation that, I mean, you literally, if for every Citizens United, you know, backed commercial that for the next cycle has to just have like flashing strobe lights that say, you know, what company is footing the bill, and then like a 20-minute infomercial on, you know, everything they've done to screw the taxpayer. Is, I mean, they have to make it just cripplingly hard for them to get anything on the air with this stuff.
They need to do a top kill finance, campaign finance reform. Just pump a bunch of mud into it to stop the flow of corporate money into campaigns. Hey, that's the show. Thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. You fudge with us, you fudge with the best. Be back next week, hopefully.
Yeah.
Drive safely, everybody. See you next Thursday. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.